High pressure over the Midwest will bring dry weather and seasonal temperatures to the region through midweek. Our next chance for rain is most likely coming Wednesday night into Thursday. Highs today in the Midwest will range from near 80 degrees across northern Wisconsin to the mid-90s across southwest Missouri. Overnight lows will range from near 60 degrees across northeast Illinois to near 70 degrees across western Missouri. In Champaign-Urbana today, sunny skies the rest of today, the high around 88 degrees. Tonight, clear and cool, the low 55. Tomorrow, sunny, the high 95. Tuesday night, partly cloudy, the low 65. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny, the high 92. And as I said, our next chance for rain looks like it'll be Wednesday night. Slight chance of showers and thunderstorms Wednesday night. Better chance on Thursday. Again, a slight chance for more rain on Thursday night. Checking temperatures and conditions around the two-state region at this hour. Sunshine, 80 degrees reported in Danville at the top of the hour. In Decatur, clear and 84 degrees. In Peoria, clear and 81. In Indianapolis, partly cloudy skies, 84 degrees. In South Bend, clear and 76. Terre Haute reporting a few clouds, 87 degrees there. At Willard Airport in Champaign, at the top of the hour, clear skies, 82 degrees. Winds out of the east at just 5 miles per hour. The humidity, 45%. The barometric pressure, 30.14 inches and falling. And outside our studios on Friends Plaza, it's 82 degrees.
Support comes from Wesley Church and Wesley Foundation at Green and Goodwin. Free Connect gatherings and dinner for new grad students, faculty, and community members with information on area resources held August 10th and 17th. Worship services Sundays at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. Details at wesleyui.org.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Our series Crime in the City continues now in Brighton, England. That city by the sea is the setting for some nasty deeds in author Peter James' series featuring fictional detective Roy Grace. Grace's exploits are based largely on real-life cases investigated by former detective Dave Gaylor. James and Gaylor show reporter Vicky Barker around Brighton Beach, which has one of Britain's worst murder rates and a long history of organized crime.
That building, the dome there, the Onion Dome, that was the Royal Mews. And
any tour of Brighton, Peter James says, has to begin at the Royal Pavilion. Built by a king for his mistress 200 years ago, its Taj Mahal-like spires are the city's best-known landmark. James's 2005 novel, Dead Simple, climaxes in the pavilion's dining room with its one-and-a-half-ton crystal chandelier.
King George IV actually was scared to sit under it because he was always worried it might come crashing down. And guess what happens in the book?
Peter James lists his interests as criminology, science, and the paranormal. He's worked in Hollywood, drives fast cars, has a house just outside Brighton, and a London flat. The tall, smiling man beside him seems to blend into the scenery. He's former Detective Chief Superintendent Dave Gaylor. And despite their different styles, the two men are friends and, they would say, collaborators. James had been hanging out with local cops since the 1980s, picking their brains for his crime novels.
And one day, one of them said to me, there's a detective, a homicide detective you ought to meet, young guy, Dave Gaylor. You find him interesting.
Gaylor's office, James says, was total chaos.
It was full of blue and green crates bulging with manila folders. I said, are you moving? And he looked at me, a very sardonic smile, and he said, no, these are my dead friends.
Peter arrived on a midweek morning and asked if he could be like a fly on the wall. He's a fly that I've not been able to get rid of ever since.
In that first meeting, Superintendent Gaylor explained that he'd been handed all the unsolved murders in the county of Sussex. Then he asked James what he was working on.
So I started telling him, he said, hang on a second, wouldn't your character have done this? Wouldn't they have used an outside inquiry team to do that? And I thought, wow, this guy's got real bandwidth.
And so Roy Grace was born, a homicide cop for whom detection is like three-dimensional chess. And though the character's private life is fiction, many of his cases are based on Gaylor's own experiences in Brighton, which, despite its genteel appearance, has one of Britain's worst murder rates and a long history of organized crime. An interruption.
Some of the people from the pavilion.
Robert Yates, head of fundraising, has recognized James. The writer got full access to the pavilion, chandelier and all, while researching Dead Simple.
How's everything?
Yeah, good. Busy.
Any horrified tourists looking around at the chandelier? Or?
Yeah. We could have said it was all Peter James' fault, couldn't we?
From the Regency time capsule of the Royal Pavilion, it's onto the lanes, a medieval maze of twisting pedestrianized alleyways, once a den of thieves and pickpockets, James says.
Brighton began as a smuggler's village, so long criminal antecedent. Then it became like a spa, a place to take the salt water.
Then, in 1841, the railroad came.
And all the villains in London, which was not a good place to be, they all come to the seaside, much nicer. They brought prostitution, cockfighting, illegal gambling, protection racketeering, and transformed the city. And you hear the gulls all the time. I think the gulls are like a part of the kind of music of Brighton. Have you ever roasted a gull, Dave?
Not yet.
Today, the lanes are a dense concentration of antique stores and bistros catering to Brighton's moneyed mix of university students and retirees, its vibrant gay community, and young professionals of all persuasions. Here and there, though, hints of Brighton's more colorful side.
This guy thinly veils appearing in my next book.
Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, good, yourself?
Yeah, very good.
I'm starting. I'm halfway through it, and it's magnificent.
Oh, thank you.
Mate, you're
very good, yeah.
Good.
Being interviewed for a radio show in America.
James introduces Brighton-born jeweller Derek Laward.
Derek's been helping on research on the new book I'm writing right now, picking his brains a little bit about the darker side of Brighton.
Yes, that's right, the darker side of Brighton.
Which you've had a bit of experience
with. Yes, you could say that, somewhere along the line.
Now the novelist and the ex-detective head uphill into a neighborhood of low Edwardian row houses and small shops called Pavilion Gardens. It looks respectable enough, but the men say the area and the nearby housing projects are home to fourth and fifth generation crime families and an active drug trade.
Roy Grace wants to find an old villain. This is where he'd start looking. Look, we're just about to meet a police officer, Sean McDonald, who actually I play poker with.
More introductions. James has clearly become a Brighton landmark, as recognisable to the locals as the pavilion itself.
We're doing a tour of Roy Grace's Brighton, so I said, look, here's a real-life cop.
But only for two more days. Yes, Friday, Sunday, I retire.
McDonald says the poker will have to wait a while.
How is he at the office?
Pretty good, actually, yeah.
It doesn't give much away.
No, it doesn't give much away. I think that's what helps in the books, isn't it, as well?
Something else that helps the books is a meticulous attention to forensic and procedural detail. James still goes out with Brighton police officers regularly. The science is changing so fast, it's transformed detective work, James says, and he wants cops who read his novels to know he's on top of that. Another Brighton landmark, it's Victorian Pier. Below, the English Channel chews at a pebbly beach. There's a panoramic view of the city's rain-swept seafront with its elegant cream-colored houses and expensive hotels. To James and Gaylor, crime scenes, real and imagined. The imagined can illuminate the real, James says, can help us better understand ourselves and each other. He says it's why he writes crime novels.
I'm fascinated in human nature, you know, why people do the things that they do. And I don't think anybody sees more of human nature in the course of, say, a 30-year career than a police officer at any rank, at any level.
James writes a book a year, hands one in, wakes up the next day, and starts on the next one. With Gaylor's help, of course.
We can sit and chat for an hour, then he has to go away for 9 months and write the book. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, I've got it made, really.
New U.S. editions of two novels in the Roy Grace series, Not Dead Yet and Dead Man's Grip, are out this fall. For NPR News, I'm Vicki Barker in Brighton, England.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the Subaru Impreza, with standard all-wheel drive and an EPA highway rating of 36 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at SubaruofChampaign.com or at their location on Route 45 in Savoy.
What could be better on a hot summer night in a Midwestern town than watching classic cars cruise by?
Anybody can have, you know, a car show in like a Dairy Queen parking lot, but I think people really enjoy the town square and the old historic buildings.
Sharing an American pastime, another summer night later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
Here is the writer's almanac for Monday. It's the 6th of August, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who discovered the antibacterial properties of penicillin, Sir Alexander Fleming, bacteriologist, born in Lochfield, Scotland, 1881. Came into his lab one morning in 1928 to find that he'd left the lid off a petri dish containing a Staphylococcus culture, which had become contaminated by a blue-green mold, and he noted that right around the moldy spots the bacteria were no longer growing. So he isolated the mold and determined it was Penicillium notatum. It's the birthday of the man who gave us some familiar lines. He gave us the line, "'Tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all, and there's not the reason why, there's but to do and die." And his words, "to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield," will be engraved on a wall in Olympic Village for the Olympic Games in London. Alfred Lord Tennyson, the poet, born Lincolnshire, England, on this day in 1809. It's the birthday of Charles Fort, born Albany, New York, 1874, who was interested in theories of the paranormal, trying to explain things that scientists could not, UFOs and spontaneous human combustion and poltergeists. His most famous book, The Book of the Damned, came out in 1919, in which he collected dozens of anecdotes about things that science could not explain. The Fortean Society is named for him, a society that encourages people to question scientific conclusions. And it's the anniversary of the first execution by electric chair. It happened on this date in 1890 in New York. They've been looking for a more humane method of capital punishment to replace hanging. A dentist from Buffalo named Alfred Southwick suggested electricity. There was a big battle in the field of electrical power going on between the Edison Company and Westinghouse. Edison promoting direct current, Westinghouse alternating. Neither of them wanted his form of current to be associated with electrocution. So Edison promoted alternating current and succeeded. Even the Westinghouse funded the appeals of death row inmates. The man who was executed was William Kemmler. It took about 8 minutes to kill him. And Westinghouse later said they would have done better using an axe. Here's a poem for today by Peter Sirchuk, entitled Heyday. For my father. We wore fedora hats and ate nickel sandwiches, played Johnny on the Pony, and pitched copper pennies.